You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Blue Friday episode, my co-host Nick Lee. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Earlier this offseason, the Seahawks added a bit more speed to their receiver room by signing veteran Philip Dorsett, a former first-round pick for the Colts out of the University of Miami. Just how fast is he? Pete Carroll said that he's the fastest guy that the Seahawks have ever had. And Nick, I don't know if I've ever heard a Pete Carrollism that ranks quite up there with this one. He said about Dorsett, he runs in the time realms we don't even think exist.
It sounds like he's describing like an Avenger or something, like, you know, like, oh yeah, Spider-Man, he can swing from the buildings, and oh yeah, Philip Dorsett has speed and time realms we don't even know exist.
He really is the Flash. I mean, I know we've had Flash Gordon here before, but he really is the Flash with how fast he runs.
Yeah, and he's very, and that's a very bold statement as well, because obviously, you know, in the time that Pete Carroll's been here, he's saying that he's the fastest he's ever had while they've been there. Immediately coming to mind, you know, Golden Tate, Percy Harvin. But when you look at the numbers, I did some deep research, because when he said that, I was like, there's no way. There's no way. I mean, I know he's fast, but there's no way. And sure enough, there is not a single receiver the Seahawks have either signed or drafted that has a faster 40 time than Philip Dorsett. I know DK Metcalf has an as fast one, which is insane in and of itself. But Philip Dorsett, there's no one that has the Seahawks have had at receiver that has a faster 40 time than Philip Dorsett. So what he said was not only maybe a little bit silly and hyperbolic, but also accurate. So maybe not hyperbolic.
Yeah, it's funny because when he first said that, I was kind of like you. I was thinking, what about Percy Harvin? I mean, when he came into the league, he was supposed to be one of the most explosive athletic players that the NFL had ever seen, the ultimate Swiss Army knife gadget player that could return kicks and punts, and you could run sweeps with him, get the football in his hand, and just let him fly. And obviously, his tenure in Seattle didn't work out near as well as what the Seahawks hoped it would, but an incredible athlete with blazing track speed. And DK Metcalf, like you said, at 228 pounds, being able to run a 4.33 40 is ridiculous in itself. But Philip Dorsett actually ran a sub 4.3 40-yard dash at Miami's Pro Day shortly after he ran that 4.33 at the Combine. So as Pete Carroll mentioned, you know, the 4.2s range is the kind of speed that he brings to the table. They have not had a receiver that is in that realm at any other point during the decade that Carroll has been on the sideline. And it's never been a question about the speed when you're talking about Philip Dorsett. He's always been fast. That's the big reason the Colts drafted him late in the first round, to give Andrew Luck another weapon that was supposed to be able to take the top off of defenses. And unfortunately for Dorsett, in his five seasons, he's only surpassed 500 receiving yards once. So the speed has not translated to production. But again, Pete Carroll, he mentioned this a couple times. Russell Wilson's now going to be the one that is throwing the football to him. It was almost kind of a underhanded shot towards Tom Brady, who had been throwing to Dorsett the last couple of years. And if you've watched Patriot games, the long ball has not been near as effective for Tom Brady the last few seasons. He's still an outstanding quarterback, but now well into his 40s, he doesn't throw those 50, 60-yard bombs well anymore. We know Russell Wilson can throw those passes as well as any quarterback in the league.
Yeah, Pro Football Focus rates Russell Wilson as the number one deep passer in the NFL right now. So that's a good receiver to have in your arsenal when your quarterback is the best deep passer in football, is having a guy that flirts with sub 4.3 speed, and having him on the field with the likes of Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and then a very, very talented tight end room if they can stay healthy. I've been pounding this drum all offseason. If this tight end room stays healthy, it is probably the deepest tight end room in football. So when you add all that together, and you can have two tight end sets with matchup nightmares galore, and several receivers, and, you know, Metcalf, Lockett, and Dorsett. If Dorsett can really lock into that top speed and take the top off of defense with Lockett and Metcalf playing at the top of their game, there's not a defense in football that could stop that for four quarters.
And he's never had a supporting cast around him at the receiving position like this. I know New England had some really solid receivers, and you have players like Julian Edelman that have been able to really continue playing at a high level into their 30s, but he has never had two other elite speedsters to go along with them that are also dynamic receivers like you have in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. And then you add in Greg Olsen and Will Disley, Jacob Hollister, that tight end room that you talked about, a couple dynamic running backs in the backfield to give you a balanced offense. Again, there's a reason that this group is so excited about the potential. And now in their practice on Thursday, the defense won that battle. And it's been a pretty defensive training camp, to be honest. But Seattle's also added a lot of reinforcements on that side of the ball. And Philip Dorsett has been one of the real bright spots throughout training camp. You can see that he and Russell Wilson are developing a rapport. That speed has been on display. Even Geno Smith hitting him for a long bomb earlier in training camp during a 7-on-7 session. So he has been able to show that speed on display. And the Seahawks, as Pete Carroll mentioned, they are going to find ways to accentuate him to this offense that maybe his previous two teams have not been able to do. And that is going to be something we're going to be talking about, the mock game coming up tomorrow. We're going to be talking about that the next two quarters. And rather than wait to discuss in the second quarter, I'm really eager. I don't know if we're going to see some of those wrinkles in a scrimmage game. This is a glorified scrimmage game at CenturyLink Field, but I'm really intrigued by how Brian Schottenheimer is going to end up mixing in some new wrinkles with a guy that is this dynamic of an athlete and already looks to have pretty good chemistry with your all-pro quarterback.
Wow. I mean, if they could figure out ways to get him the ball downfield along with all the other weapons they have, and I know we're probably not going to see it in the mock game tomorrow, or excuse me, yeah, on Saturdays as well with the plays that they have kind of drawn up for Philip Dorsett, but eventually I think in the next couple of weeks we'll see, at least with some practices and some plays, some things that they're going to try to expose the defense in the back end. And really, that'll bring out the best of Philip Dorsett.
And I think you're going to see him play some out of the slot too. And that's something that he was starting to do in New England. Indianapolis, he was mostly playing on the outside. And the Patriots started to work him in there. And I think that he has improved enough as a route runner. And this is a guy that doesn't have very many drops in his career. He's been pretty sure-handed when he's had his opportunities. When you add all these things together, it just starts to become more baffling why he has not been more productive. He did have a career high in touchdown receptions last year, but he just hasn't been able to put everything together. If he's not able to do it here, though, with the quarterback he's got thrown to him and all the other weapons that the Seahawks have put around him, this is the ideal situation for him to have pressure taken off him. If he's not able to do it in this situation, then it's no longer about change of scenery. The guy just isn't living up to his first-round billing. But on the field, he has been very impressive so far for the Seahawks, and he's going to be a fun player to watch. If that translates to game day with the other weapons they've got, it's just another speedy receiver that defenses are going to have to try to account for, and it's going to make it even more difficult to put double teams on your elite targets in Lockett and Metcalf. When we come back for the second quarter, we've got a big mock game coming up at CenturyLink Field on Saturday tomorrow. This is going to be really the first preseason game that we're going to see. There are no actual exhibition contests this year, so this will be the first time that we'll see a game setting. No fans in attendance, obviously, at CenturyLink Field. We're going to break down what we're looking to watch on the offensive side of the football when we come back for the second quarter. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited, until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Blue Friday show, Nick Lee. Tomorrow, we have our first preseason game, so to speak, coming up. It is a inter-squad scrimmage, an offense versus defense mock game that's going to be taking place at CenturyLink Field. Obviously, no fans in the stands. There will be limited media there that are going to be able to cover and watch the game. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to see these guys go at each other in a little bit different setting than what we've seen at the VMAC. Obviously, still going to be playing against your own teammates. That's the only way they're going to get experience this month without any actual preseason games. But let's talk on offense, Nick. Maybe some storylines to watch in this mock game coming up. We've seen practices up to this point. You'll have the eighth practice today. And so we'll have eight practices in the book. And then when they finally get an opportunity to, even though they're playing against each other, play in a game setting, what's the first thing that you're really interested to see what happens at CenturyLink?
Well, you know, the most interesting thing in football, and that's the backup quarterback battle of the Seattle Seahawks. but in all seriousness, you know, typically with preseason games, that's the thing you watch for is you got the typical assumed backup, which in this case is Geno Smith, and the young challenger in Anthony Gordon. That is pretty common among camps. Is most camps that have an established franchise quarterback have that backup battle where every year, like, oh, is this the time where the seventh round pick or the undrafted guy comes up and nicks the backup veteran, you know? And this has a different wrinkle too, because looming in the distance is Danny Etling, and he's not going to participate tomorrow, but he's on the roster, and he'll be slinging footballs around pretty soon at the VMAX. So, but yeah, first and foremost, going to see, obviously you're going to compare the two in performance. Russell Wilson will get his job's not in jeopardy, but Geno Smith and Anthony Gordon, there absolutely are. You know, maybe you can sneak Anthony Gordon on a practice squad. I'm not sure. So this will be an interesting battle for Geno Smith and Anthony Gordon. I've been reading in between the lines that the Seahawks are pleased with Anthony Gordon so far. Certainly, at least in my experience, Corbin, it sounds like Pete Carroll's been more complimentary of Anthony Gordon learning the system than he was, say, for Alex Magoo.
Yeah, he kind of has been to this point. And that was an issue that Magoo was dealing with. There were some concerns about him picking up the playbook and being able to master their scheme. Gordon, even without OTAs and minicamps, from everything that I've heard, has been exceeding expectations in that regard. Still, though, he has not gotten a lot of reps in the practice field. And part of it's because without preseason games, as Pete Carroll again hit on Thursday, they are going to have more reps for Russell Wilson and the first team in general, because they don't get those reps now when they're building up in preseason games. And so that even further limits a third-string quarterback. Geno Smith's still getting plenty of reps out there, but Anthony Gordon, his team reps have been few and far between. 7-on-7's few and far between. The chances he's had, he's looked pretty good. So he's going to have to really be lights out in his limited opportunities in a mock game to really create any doubt about who the backup quarterback is going to be. Now, in the backfield, on the other hand, it's funny because you and I had talked about this a few weeks ago about Travis Homer being a player that we were both very excited about going into his second season. And he's still a player that intrigues me, but DJ Dallas just continues to be one of the main standouts for the Seahawks on the offensive side of the football in the backfield. Short, squatty build, really unique skill set to go with it. A former receiver with really soft hands. He's good in pass protection, and he's been getting the rookie treatment pretty much every practice, where he's just been getting nailed by the defense, and yet he just keeps coming back for more. He loves it. And his contact balance, this is a guy that you could run over with a Mack truck and he's still going to be standing up. And so Pete Carroll has to be really excited about what he's seen from this rookie so far. And when you look at his skill set, the fact that he's probably a better between the tackles runner than Travis Homer, I think on the outside runs, Homer has the advantage there with a little more burst, but they are very comparable as receivers, both really good in pass protection. I think these mock games are going to really play a big role in which one of those guys at the start of the season is going to be getting those third down reps.
And I've been saying pretty much all along since the Seahawks drafted DJ Dallas that I think he's the more complete back overall long-term than Travis Homer. I think obviously Travis Homer has the edge because he knows the system and he's played a year already. And yeah, he's got a bit more of a burst on the edge. But as far as an all-around back, I think DJ Dallas has him beat by a little bit. And just he has been, and I've seen up and down social media and just some videos, his route running, his pass catching, he has a receiver background, which certainly helps his hands. The one-on-one drills with linebackers. I mean, he's been passing every test so far. So it's hard to count out DJ Dallas, even though he's a year behind Travis Homer for that third down spot. That doesn't mean Travis Homer won't have a place on this team if DJ Dallas just all of a sudden explodes. But you remember Chris Carson, Corbin. I remember it's not the same situation where all of a sudden DJ Dallas is going to become the starting running back. That's probably not happening. But I remember when you were there and you were tooting the Chris Carson horn before a lot of people were, Corbin. And it doesn't quite feel the same because he's a higher draft pick, but I think people are sleeping on DJ Dallas a little bit, just kind of as a castaway, like, oh yeah, fourth running back, he'll do something for us eventually. I think that he'll make an impact pretty darn soon, if not, you know, right out the gate.
It's looking like a pretty darn good pick in the fourth round, and you needed insurance with Rashad Penny being out. It's a good problem to have, because when Penny comes back, you're going to have some tough decisions to make in that backfield. But let's talk about some other tough decisions that need to be made. Right now, the offensive line, for the most part, it seems to be set in stone. I think Ethan Posick has pulled away from B.J. Finney at that center position, because now they've got Finney doing some work at left guard. That tells me they're trying to figure out, is there a spot that maybe this guy is going to be a better fit? Ethan Posick is going to be our center. Now, if B.J. Finney plays much better in the mock game, suddenly that might change things. I think it's still early enough that this might not be completely cemented, but I think right now Ethan Posick's in good shape. So I want to see what happens with that center position at left and right guard as well. Phil Haynes was actually working at right guard. I thought he was going to be competing against Upati at left guard, and they've got Jordan Simmons over there instead. So there's been some mixing and matching. I'm excited to see Cedric Obwehi in game action. He's looked pretty darn good in their practices, and he's gotten a lot of reps because Dwayne Brown, they've been taking it easy with their veteran left tackle. He's only been participating in parts of practice, and that's allowing him to stay fresh for the regular season, especially with some of the injuries that he had last year. They want to make sure he's good to go when the regular season gets here. But then you've got your right tackle position, Brandon Schelt. Looks like he's going to be in really good shape to be over there as the starter. Jamarco Jones and Ogwehi have been getting some reps there as well. I just want to see what the rotation looks like. And of course, in game action, this is really the best chance that we've had to see what that line is going to look like in real time against a real pass rushing defensive line that's going to be trying to get after Russell Wilson or Geno Smith. It's our first chance to really see how it looks.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this is going to be a very, very competitive group on the offensive line. And I think, speaking of good problems to have, if Ethan Posick can emerge as the starting center and be a quality starting center, we know B.J. Finney can play all over the place too. So if Ethan Posick can grab hold of that center job, that doesn't mean B.J. Finney is going to ride the bench. I mean, we've seen in practice so far that B.J. Finney is getting some snaps at guard, at right guard. And, you know, if Posick can handle that center spot, that's just more, all the more depth, because I think we both can agree that towards the end of last year, we kind of had already written the will and testament of Ethan Posick as a Seahawk. And all of a sudden, whether it be some change in coaching philosophy or hit a change in regimen for him or just a change of position. We talked last week, Corbin, about how this is his natural position. So he played at LSU. He's a very, very good center at LSU against some really good SEC defensive lines. And he probably feels more at home at center than he did at any guard spot or heck, even at tackle for a little bit. So I think if he can take hold of that center spot, and I'm really interested to see how he does that against the starting defensive line for the Seahawks. That'll be a great problem to have. That'll just spread the depth everywhere else. The rising tide raises all ships. And so you can have Finney somewhere else, and that'll just add to the depth at guard. There's the embarrassment of maybe not riches, but a depth and able-bodied, just perfectly able guards that the Seahawks have. That'll just add to the list, which is never a bad thing, because it seems like the Seahawks can just not keep guards healthy for very long. So yeah, the offensive line is really interesting. Brandon Schell, I'm the more I watch him, the more I read about him, I'm pretty optimistic at him being able to at least be a serviceable replacement for Jermaine Ifedi, and maybe even better, at least less penalized. But and overall, this will be a great. I think this will be one of the more interesting things to watch. That's a good word, is rotation, because we're going to see a lot of bodies thrown in the offensive line in the mock game and the practices ensuing after that. So yeah, it's going to be a rotation for now.
There's a lot of competition going on in that front line. As Pete Carroll has said, they would like some clarity with the starting lineup as soon as possible. But at the same time, you don't want to rush into it either, especially without having OTAs, mini camps, and preseason games. So this first real action playing at CenturyLink Field, I think that is the position group that maybe it's most important to get a real assessment of because of the way that practices are conducted in today's NFL. Now let's go to the receiver spot real quick. Obviously, you and I both want to see what Greg Olsen and Will Dissly looks like at tight end. Not a ton of question marks there. We just know that they've got plenty of talent and plenty of depth there. But at the receiver spots, Philip Dorsett seems to be pulling away from everybody else for that third spot, as we mentioned in the first quarter. But I think the fourth and fifth receiver spots, we are just getting started with that particular battle. There are four or five players there competing. You've got John Ursua. Freddie Swain has missed three practices in a row. He looked good at the start of training camp, but he needs to get back on the field so that he can compete. And then, of course, you've got a couple of holdovers from last year. You've got David Moore, and then you've got Cody Thompson and Penny Hart, two second-year players that were on the practice squad for Seattle last year. And to be honest, those two guys, particularly Thompson, have been getting quite a few reps with the first team offense, catching some passes from Russell Wilson, especially as of the last couple of practices. And it seems like there's been an advantage for them since they did get practice snaps last year over these rookies who had never played in the NFL until a little over a week ago. And so I'm just really curious how this plays out. You would think that David Moore is going to have one of those two spots, but he really hasn't stood out at any of the training camp practices so far. Whereas Cody Thompson's looked really good. Penny Hart has had some really good practices this week after a slow start. And of course, John Ursua is a player that at the beginning of camp made some nice catches, and they've been really excited about his potential. So there is still a lot to figure out there at the bottom of that depth chart.
I think receiver is going to be one of those positions where when you look at the initial roster heading into Atlanta, people are going to be pretty darn surprised. There's going to be like a, whoa, I didn't see that coming, or a surprise cut or surprise depth chart move. I think receiver is one of those that is, there's nothing really set after Lockett and Metcalf. Even Philip Dorsett, I know that Pete Carroll was pretty, gave him a pretty glowing review today, but his third spot I don't think is totally set in stone yet. So really, you talk about, I don't know, how many receivers, that's 6, 7, 8, 9 receivers for three spots. I mean, there's going to be some fierce, fierce competition, and we've already seen it. So I think that the receivers are going to be one of those positions where there is a surprise cut, a surprise guy like a Cody Thompson makes the team, or John Ursua all of a sudden is the fourth receiver, and he's taking a ton of snaps with the ones, and it gets maybe all the way up to week one, where I think John Ursua is going to have way more targets this year. I don't think he's going to wait till week 17 to get his first catch this year. I think that he's going to be part of this team. That's my prediction. But I know you're excited about Penny Hart. I know you're really excited about Cody Thompson, but this group has a ton of potential to just be shuffled around and really have some surprising names rise to the top.
And of course, there's still always the chance that Josh Gordon gets reinstated and gets thrown into that late in training camp too.
Oh, please.
I hope we'll see. We'll see if that happens. But your points are very well made that this is going to be one of those cases where, just like preseason games, when you have got that many good players vying for just a couple of spots, this mock game is going to have a lot of bearing on the final outcome there, because it is a very close call between the four or five players that I mentioned for a number of different reasons. And so to try to figure that out, it's going to be a tough call for the Seahawks coaching staff. But I agree with you. I think there will be a surprise. You know, for those of us that have been at the practices, maybe it won't be surprising. But I think there's going to be somebody there that going into camp, nobody thought was going to be there, whether that's a Thompson or a Freddie Swain or a Penny Hart, somebody that maybe you didn't think was going to be one of your top five receivers. And maybe they'll keep six. We don't know how all this is going to play out. But you're still going to have a couple players that have played well that are not going to be on your roster when you travel to Atlanta. When we come back in the third quarter, we're going to switch over to the defensive side of the ball. What are some things that Nick and I are going to be looking for in this upcoming Saturday mock scrimmage at CenturyLink Field on the defensive side of the football? You won't want to miss it. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on our Blue Friday edition of Locked On Seahawks. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee. We just talked offense on the mock game. What are some things that we are going to be looking for from the Seahawks offense at CenturyLink Field? Now let's switch gears to the defensive side. And man, it has been fun to see how much faster this defense looks on the practice field. Now we get a chance to see what they look like on the CenturyLink Field turf, going up against their offensive teammates in a game setting so many questions going into this. And it's a little different than on offense, where we had some questions about positional battles and things of that nature. I'm more curious on the defensive side of the football about how certain players are going to be deployed. And I think it would be a major mistake if we didn't start off with this first question. How much do the Seahawks uncage Jamal Adams in this matchup, in this mock game that doesn't count in the standings? Are we really going to get a glimpse into how they're really truly planning to use this extremely versatile, talented football player?
Uncage is a very good word because he is an animal in the best sense of the word. He's a freak of nature. And I'm really interested to see how much he plays at the line of scrimmage, how much he becomes that box safety, how much he becomes that you know, Cam Chancellor kind of player. And I want to see how many positions he plays, or at least how many different spots he lines up on the field, because he is the prototypical Swiss Army knife defensive player that every defensive coordinator dreams and asks Santa Claus for and, you know, prays for. He is that guy. And I don't think he's going to be bored in Seattle. He's, like he said, he's not going to be bored winning, but I don't think that he's going to be bored in the scheme. I think that the Seahawks are really going to have a lot of fun putting in places. And I think we're going to get a nice taste of that on Saturday. And I'm really interested to see how much he's at the line of scrimmage and how many quote sacks he gets.
And they've been blitzing him a fair amount on the practice field in team sessions. And so I will not be surprised at all if they cut him loose a little bit. I'm sure there's going to be some wrinkles that they're going to keep hidden until real games start next month. That would be wise on their part. But you mentioned him not being bored. There's no way that he's going to get bored, because it's clearly evident to me the Seahawks know they have a safety that is different than any safety that they've had in the Carroll era. And that's not saying that Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor were not absolute studs, because they were. But Jamal Adams can just do some things that neither one of those guys was going to be getting six sacks in a season and be a dynamic pass rusher. I mean, he just does different things that you just don't normally see safeties do. And, you know, Pete Carroll and Ken Dorton Jr. are not oblivious to that. They're going to stick with their scheme, but they are going to find ways to play to their players' strengths. And doing that with Jamal Adams is going to require a bit more creativity. And I think they're excited to unlock some of those creative wrinkles into this scheme. And then sticking to the secondary, we finally got a look yesterday at Quentin Dunbar with the team defense. He's been just playing individual drills and some one-on-ones, a little bit of 7-on-7 up to this point, as they're trying to ease him back into football shape. And so we finally got to see him a little bit yesterday. They're going to start continuing to work him more and more into the defensive rotation. For now, Trey Flowers is still the starter at right cornerback. I'm really curious how those reps get split up in a scrimmage game.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the main thing to watch, is the split of snaps, because that's going to be a good tell. Obviously, Quentin Dunbar started late, and so he's going to get stretched out, so to use baseball speak, for, you know, the pitchers that are in spring training and kind of got to get their engines revved up before they can throw nine innings of shutout ball. And that's the same thing, I think, with football players, especially with such a weird preseason. An odd preseason, I think that they need to be pretty careful just revving them up all of a sudden. So right now, yeah, Trey Flowers, it's a battle. This is not anyone's job. I think we all can assume on paper, all things created equal, Quentin Dunbar is the better corner right now. But like the Seahawks have always said, always compete. Trey Flowers has been there. Quentin Dunbar has not. But right now, it's going to be a battle, and it might be a 50-50 split. I would imagine it'll be a pretty even split, but then eventually, as it turns to next week, I think that Dunbar will start to pull away a little bit. He's just such a good corner. I think he has a Pro Bowl season if he can stay on the field all 16 games.
And I think that's going to be a really interesting competition the next few weeks. I know a lot of people are just jumping to the conclusion it's going to be Dunbar's spot, and I think when it's all said and done, there's a reason they traded for him, and it was not to ride the bench. He is going to get out there. But I think Trey Flowers isn't going to just give it up so easily. And he has made some plays out there. Everybody's been watching the clips of DK Metcalf burning him a couple times. And the honest to God truth is, nobody should be denouncing Flowers for that, because I have a feeling that DK Metcalf is going to be doing that to a lot of corners in 2020. A lot of really good ones at that are going to get toasted by DK Metcalf. And so there's no shame in occasionally getting burned in practice by him. And he's made some really nice plays as well that have drawn compliments from the coaching staff out there on the field. So I think he's still going to get most of the reps in this mock game, but you're going to see more Quentin Dunbar as days progress here. And I think eventually, like you, that he's going to be starting in week one when they play the Falcons. Now, we know the linebacker talent in this group, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright and company. I would expect they're going to get their handful of snaps on Saturday. And then it's going to become down to how are they going to divvy up reps for the backups. Right now, Jordan Brooks is with the backups in his first week with the team, first round pick. He's getting some key, you know, getting a fair number of snaps where he is getting to play with some starters, but he is clearly behind those top three guys at least a week into camp. And then you've got Ben Burkervin, who has been one of the bigger surprises for me in training camp. Shaquem Griffin, who's still rushing a lot off the edge. They're taking advantage of his strengths. And then, of course, Cody Barton, a player that Pete Carroll has said a couple times that fans shouldn't be forgetting about. And so he's kind of been that guy that's been cast aside that Carroll's pointed out, look, he's still going to have a role in this defense. So I really want to see who is able to separate himself within that group of players, because you know what you're going to get from Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, and even Bruce Irvin. But what are you going to get from all those young linebackers that are battling against each other for maybe two or three roster spots?
I mean, we know that Jordan Brooks is going to be – they're pretty excited to get Jordan Brooks on the field because of just, you know, he's a first-round pick. They really, really like him. They reached for him by most standard, by most people's opinions. I mean, you can have that opinion if you want, but so they're going to give him a chance to get on the field early and often. I think that everyone was writing off Ben Burkervin a little too fast before the season started. I was still kind of in his camp. I think that he can bring something to the table. Yeah, yeah. And we had this discussion. We were making the 53-man roster. I actually kept him on the roster, and that surprised you. And now I'm not saying that this means that early in camp, this means he's going to make the team. But he has surprised, and don't forget about me. And, you know, you got position group on the field for the Seahawks, and I know tight end I think is a close second, but just so many talented linebackers. You know, Ben Burkervin, Cody Barton, and Shaquem Griffin. Those guys could be starting elsewhere for a poorer defense. I think that they could be quality starters, but the Seahawks are just so deep at linebacker. It's going to be really interesting because I think that we're going to see Jordan Brooks pretty darn early in the season, and they're going to give him as many reps as they can. I'm really excited to see him against some top-tier offensive talent facing the Seahawks offense. When the coach speak, you know, they're going to the playoff game against the Packers, they found a little bit of something. If they can just get that a couple times a game, that's worth keeping him around. The speed, we can both agree, the speed he has, that is worth keeping around on the edge. What he did at UCF, what he did in that playoff game against the Packers, that is worth investing in. So there really is, yeah, so many players for so little spots, but really it's probably the best problem to have right now for the Seahawks is which linebacker gets what, how many snaps, because they all bring something quality to the table.
And that's going to be another one of those position groups where the Seahawks coaching staff is going to be battling how many of these guys do we want to keep, and special teams, of course, are going to play into it. Maybe you can keep all those guys around, but it could put you in a tough spot on a certain game day. If you have a position group like corner or safety or something where a guy or two goes down, now you're suddenly like, well, I've got 90 linebackers, but what do I do at the safety position? You know, unless you're just going to chuck Shaquem Griffin back there with his speed. And from what Carroll has said in the past, that's not something they're inclined to do with him, is just suddenly make him a safety. So it's going to be really fascinating to see how that plays out. And again, the mock game is going to have a lot of bearing on this, especially without any preseason games coming up. This is your final test before the regular season. If you're somebody that's battling for a roster spot, these two mock games. Now, let's wrap up real quick. Obviously, we can talk about Marquise Blair versus Ugo Amadi sprinkled in with all the other discussions we've had here, but we know that Russell Wilson isn't going to be going to the ground. Neither is Geno Smith or Anthony Gordon. Quarterbacks are not going to really get sacked in this mock game. But everything that's going on in front of them is going to be full speed. This is really the first chance that we get to see what this pass rush, without Jadeveon Clowney, without signing Everson Griffin or any other players for that matter. They brought in Benson Maioa and Bruce Irvin, brought him back to Seattle. You've got a couple rookies there. Darrell Taylor is yet to play. He will not play in this mock scrimmage. But Alton Robinson has looked pretty good out there. You get to see some of these new faces with some of the old ones. And you can see maybe this pass rush can be better than what it was last year, even with losing a star player like Clowney. This is really the first chance we get to see what this group is made out of, and that speed that's been visible on the practice field, is it going to translate into an actual game situation?
This is the closest thing we're going to see before Atlanta to how much has it improved. I am of the opinion that it has improved, that they'll get more sacks just in the law of averages, the quantity of the talent they brought in. You wrote a nice article about Bruce Irvin and Ben Samayoa. They have 15 and a half sacks between the two last year. They know how to get to the quarterback. The rookies, Alton Robinson made some good plays in camp today, in the run game at least. And I think that there's going to be some surprises. I think that this group will probably surprise and look, maybe they're not going to be, this fierce pass rush right off the bat, but they're going to look improved from last year. The veteran leadership that they brought in, plus the juice of the rookies, the young guys. And yeah, so this will be the hardest. This is such a hard camp to evaluate, hard preseason to evaluate, because you're not going against the Raiders. You're not going against the Chargers or the Vikings. You don't have the different colored jersey that maybe you don't know all of his moves, or he doesn't know all your moves. And that's kind of the beauty of football. And it gets kind of tiring hitting the same colors over and over and over again. So it's not going to be a perfect look, because obviously these guys know each other very well. But it's as good as we're going to get. And in 2020 with sports, it's just the definition of you get what you can take. And right now we're going to have to take what we get with this, what we look at in the game on Saturday. And we're going to be overreacting to whatever we see. So you buckle up for that on Monday.
Well, that'll be like any preseason game then. I mean, we always, and all of us are guilty for it. We see a player really jump out. I mean, I can't tell you how many guys that we've seen in training camp practices over the years that we were just blown away by that end up not making the team. So there's always those cautionary tales. And then there are guys that play like what Cody Thompson, for example, has in the first week of training camp that the Seahawks can't resist. They have to keep him around. The guy earned a roster spot. So you just never know. And there's going to be plenty of hyperbole. There always is, especially right now when we're so sports starved. We do have basketball and baseball back, but I mean, this is the only football that we have right now. And we don't know if those three conferences, they're still saying they're going to play in college football, if they're actually going to be able to do it or not. And so fans are going to be eating up any chance that they can to watch NFL football right now. And so there's going to be plenty of narratives that come out of this. There's going to be some things that are legitimate ones. And of course, there'll be some ones that, it's just one day. If one guy has kind of an off day, you can't just jump to the conclusion, that guy has no chance to make the team. But it does have the power to be a difference maker for somebody like a Thompson that is trying to make this football team, that has practiced well. If you continue playing well in a mock game setting, then that is extremely helpful in your case for trying to make this Seahawks football team. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. We finally get to see a semi-close to real NFL game at CenturyLink Field on Saturday. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Nick at NickLee51. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on Monday, we're going to discuss what went down at the mock game, looking at some offensive and defensive takeaways, how the rookies performed, how some of the veterans handled their first game action of the 2020 season, plus, of course, our Monday mailbag segment. Enjoy your weekend. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Wear a mask. Go Hawks.